Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Kimberly Cloud Show. I'm your host, Kimberly Cloud. I have a very special guest here for the show today. I cannot wait to announce what his name is and who he is and where he's from. Sorry about that, you guys. You can go ahead and bring him on in, Doug, whenever you're ready. Hi, how are you? Can you go ahead and announce to the world who you are and where you're calling from?
Sure, this is Sid Mohasib, and I'm calling from Los Angeles.
Great, and I know you're eager. I don't want to waste none of your time. I just want to talk about your past leading up into your present before we go digging into questions.
Sure. So you want to know where I came from and why am I here? Is that right?
Correct.
Well, that's a bigger question for one man and one few minutes, but I'll try to address it. I am I'm a immigrant originally from Iran. I came to the States. I hate to say it because you'll know how old I am, about 47 years ago, 48 years ago, and I came by myself at the age of 16. Went to school, went to college, started my first business in college, and joined a consulting firm, was a partner of that consulting firm, and helped really large organizations like the IBMs of the world or Federal Reserve Banks of the world, and then started my own own shop doing what's called a turnaround shop. We would buy companies that didn't do well from bigger companies like DuPont and so forth.
But I don't mean to cut you off, but what was the standpoint that catapults you to being able to do what you just said? You're like being able to buy businesses. What business did you get into where you were able to flip money and get into that type of business?
So here's the thing. There's two questions of what business, because we looked for what business for a while to find the right opportunity. If you're asking me what drove me to do that, again, before that, I was doing a lot of consulting, and we would serve a lot of people from Wall Street when they were doing these big deals. And I was making consulting money, which wasn't bad. I was making, as a 25, 26 years old, I was making good money.
I had a
pretty decent life, but I saw that they're making a lot more money, and they would hire us to do the operations and the strategy and all the hard lifting. So I thought, I'd like to be on the other side, and that basically drove that mentally, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and you can continue. So you went to selling businesses or buildings and stuff. Tell me about
that. Well, and then along that this is, you know, I'm getting you to the 90s, essentially. That's 30-some years ago. And I did that through the 90s, and I built also a number of other companies, early-stage companies, technology companies.
Tell me about the technology companies.
What do you want to know? I did... four or five of them. A number of them worked. One didn't work in the dot-com era, in the 2000 timeframe. And they were basically mostly software companies that we would identify as a market need and start it up and get it bigger and then sell it. And then I became... After doing some of that, I sold another company and I became an angel investor. That means I made investments in early stage companies.
Yes, Damon John used to do that, yeah. Or still does. Yeah, so that's a huge thing where you invest in companies and you watch your money grow. Yeah. We have to talk after the show about that because I have to get back into that. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So you don't always watch it grow. Sometimes you watch it dwindle. Most of the time. So it's a harsh game, but for me, the creativity, the working with early stage companies and so forth makes me feel good. So then after that, I sold one of my companies to KPMG, which is a pretty big, large advisory and accounting firm. It's a $26 billion company. And I helped them build a venture capital fund. Then I was the head of their strategic innovation. So that takes us to about 6 or 7 years ago. And since then, I write books. I have a few books. I have probably, I don't know, over 100 articles or so in Harvard Business Review and London School of Economics and Times.
You know what's funny? I seen somebody that was in Harvard Review. I think it was called Harvard Review. And I filled out an application and they say I didn't qualify because I didn't make enough. And I started laughing. I said, well, at least they acknowledged me. So that's pretty cool. You deserve a round of applause for that. And what else have you been in?
And so since the past 6 or 7 years, I guess, I'm an author. I do some speaking engagements. I've got 2 TED Talks. And I also am a professor at USC. I teach both in engineering and in business school. And I still do advisory work for consulting, for helping companies.
So, wow. Now I got to pick your brain about engineering. Do you think that in the future we can possibly get something like a time machine? Because I ask every scientist that, or engineer, because, you know, there are things that we cannot explain that happens in the world. You know, like, for instance, there's telekinesis, telepathic, and people don't believe in that unless they see it. So my and there's many others, like they finally, for example, a great example, like the Terminator, they have a robot that can transform into a liquid. I don't know if you heard about that. And then re-transform into a solid. He broke himself out of jail. That's cool. What do you think about that?
So first of all, you know, do you see the air you breathe?
Yes. No. No, we don't.
So just because you don't see it, that doesn't mean it doesn't exist.
Ah, such a great example. Oh, my
that
God.
That doesn't mean it doesn't exist. Now, we have a tendency of exaggerating things because of our imagination, which is a really great thing. But not all that looks, for example, we say UFOs, and there's lots of stuff that's coming on UFOs, but we immediately think that they are horrible, dangerous. Why is it that, you know, why is it that it would be, we went to Mars, were we dangerous? Were we, no. We went to the moon, were we trying to kill people and eliminate them? No. You know, the thing is that it's I don't know if the word is right, but it's sexier. It's more exciting if you feel bad things than if you good things. So people exaggerate. Oh, this Terminator thing is going to do that, and then it's going to, and then it's coming in and eliminate. There is enough scientific proof that there is a lot that we don't know. There is enough scientific proof. Now, you got me on a path. So, you know, some people call me the entrepreneur philosopher because I'm an entrepreneur. And also, like, my last book was a bestseller in the philosophy as well as in business. Mm-hmm. So here's what I think we are. We are at a 1,000-year inflection point, more be a 10,000-year inflection point. We have all these AI things that's coming through, which we're all afraid of. Oh, how's it going to do? What's going to happen to me? And if I'm a singer, my voice is gone. If I'm an accountant, this thing is going to replace me. If I'm whatever I am, we're feeling that we're losing control. In reality, I think we're changing or going through an evolution process. Before, we started changing our, the way we eat. We started, our teeth would have been, 2 feet long if we didn't discover knife and fire and all that. It would be, it's an evolutionary process. So you've gone through a physical evolutionary process for hundreds of thousands of years. Now we have to go through a mental evolution process, mm-hmm. which is the ability to say, I don't need to do the mundane things. Who says that I have to work 9 hours in a day to make a living? why? Who made that up? Why is that important? If some robot can clean the streets, why do I need to have a human being who has its intelligence in cleaning the streets? That doesn't make any sense. Why do we do things that we do? Because we have been forced to do it in our evolutionary process, and we think that living is that. But I think we're at this is not happening probably in my lifetime. I think it's 100, 200 year cycle before we get there. We have to be able to say, you know, our greatest asset, what we have, the best thing we have is right here. It's our ability to create, to innovate, to take things to the next level. So if we free ourselves of the mundane things that we're involved with, then we can do things that are much bigger and better. But we have to believe this, and we have to slowly move towards this. I completely get it that somebody who lives in the projects or, you know, that doesn't have necessarily the means to make the ends meet doesn't have time to be creative. You know, I gotta go to work and come back. Somebody who's in, middle of the country and works in a coal mine.
Right.
That's what his father did. That's what he knows. So when you say, oh, we don't need any this kind of an energy, we did that. Just wait a minute. So there's a lot of, and I think interesting stuff. I think exciting stuff ahead for humanity. And some of that is understanding those other things that we don't understand now. We have to be open to be able to understand. If we're not open, we won't understand.
Agreed. You know, I got to pick your brain. Two more questions. Okay. Now, there's people that know about RNA and DNA. Now, what if we can, because some higher ups like Facebook, I remember, I'll say this statement before I go there. I remember in the early 90s, there was a guy that actually had a series of plugs in his skin, and he was able to pay. It was overseas. Then they talked about microchips in your brain, how that can shut down or whatnot. But here's the kicker. I wanted to talk about two things. DNA alteration. I don't know if we can alter the DNA, but what if we did a cool thing and took artificial intelligence and put it in our DNA just enough to get our brains to reach full capacity or near full capacity? That's number two. I was wondering if we could sit up there and have a sort of like, not a laser, but some sort of wavelength instrument. Because I'll explain this. YouTube, in our lifetime, nobody can watch the beginning to end of YouTube. YouTube is indefinite and infinite. You know, it wouldn't even take a whole lifetime. It's beyond a whole lifetime. And so I was wondering if we can have an instrument to download images in our brain so we can get and grow our brain.
I got you. So let me dissect your comment into multiple things. First of all, artificial intelligence is about having data. It's like if you want to build a building, you need material. You need concrete, you need you need metal, you need glass, you need all those stuff to build a building. In order to build an artificial intelligent machine, you need data. Okay? Data is what? Data is what you do every day. Data is all those videos. Data is every book that has ever been written. That's data. So when these ChatGPT or generative AI and stuff that you hear all about it, and when they say they have trained it, the reason it can come back with you with an answer if you ask a question is they have let it loose to essentially read all the books ever written.
That's cool.
Okay. So it's a depository of all of that information. And what it does, it's machine learning. It learns from that and provides you with some intelligence. All right. Now, imagine if you and I, see, we have a limited ability to process information, as you said. You said nobody can watch all the videos. Nobody can read all the books. How many books have you read? Okay, maybe I've read 100. Maybe 200. Maybe I am a very, very prophetic thing. I've read 500 books. Okay. Maybe Bill Gates has read 1,000 books. But how many people have the capacity of reading all those books and remembering all of them? No. But in a machine learning environment, in an AI machine, you could have all those videos that you were saying watched. And they could dissect it to minute by minute and who said what and all of that sort of stuff. So now imagine you have the ability to access that. Now we have our memory. We can access, oh, what did I do yesterday? What did I do when I was a kid? What did I learn in book in math? What did I? Okay, those are things what we're doing as a human being. We're accessing that data in our mind. We're accessing it. We're remembering it. And then we bring it in and we use it, right? So we go to Starbucks and we remember, oh, yesterday I had this kind of coffee that was good. I tasted it. It was good. So I'm going to have another one. So what we're steadily doing is we're taking data from yesterday or the day before. We learn math in school. We say, oh, 2 + 2 = 4. And then we remember that. And then we bring it in. It's knowledge that is applied. If we have access to things that are from the past and have ever been written or ever been spoken, and we have that database in accessibility, imagine what our creativity can do with that. That's if an Einstein could remember, he'd read 1,000 books and he came up with, now imagine if he had the capacity to have access to 1,000,000 books.
Yeah.
So is it possible, this is what I was saying, that if we shift our mindset that, hey, these are tools, we shouldn't be afraid of it, it's going to give us a lot, but we have to be mentally ready to get past the mundane of making a living every day, to be able to do that. I don't think that's in our lifetime, but I think it will come. Now, you mentioned the chip thing. For example, Elon Musk has a company and they've created a chip, they've tested it in pigs, I think they've also tested it in humans, that people who have who are paralyzed by because of their nerve is disconnected, they can put that chip in and that chip kind of gaps the between the brain waves and the rest of the body, and now they can walk.
Wow.
There are things that are being done with the blindness that is changing changing some of the DNA stuff. There are things in, for example, I have hemophilia, which is a blood disease. They are now having things that would do that RNA thing. It would inject it into your liver. It would change the dynamics of how the blood is generated, and it's fixing it. So those kind of things are actually pretty, pretty close. Now, the thing is, we're afraid.
Yes, a lot of people are.
So I was in China 6 or 7 years ago, Kimberly. Okay. Mm-hmm. I used to go there to teach over the summer at one of the prestigious universities. And I was asked to look at what they call a deal, you know, an investment thing. So they say, hey, come look at this business. And I look at it. First of all, it was way above my head in terms of and way above my pocketbook. This was, people had already spent about $1 billion in this company. Okay? Don't ask me the name, I forgot it. It's some Chinese name. But this guy was a mathematician, data scientist, and he was the founder. And he was a biologist, microbiologist, both PhDs.
Wow.
And he was building a thing that will take your DNA and my DNA and everybody's DNA. And if you get sick, right? Let's say I have cancer. It feeds the different, all these things that we feed. For example, we do radiation or we do, chemotherapy or whatever. Whatever my sickness, it would feed that to the machine. Mm-hmm. The machine would run it and see if it would fix me. If it does, then say, okay, take it. If it doesn't, says it has these side effects. Let's change it. So a lot of the medicine that we take, and this is amazing. I read this somewhere. I was talking to this guy Eric Topol, who's a pretty ingenious guy, and his research showed that only 70% of the drugs we take actually work.
Wow.
That means 30% don't work. We're just experimenting. You go to the doctor and says, take this. Says, oh, okay.
That's scary.
isn't it?
10% is a huge number to me because there's, what if it's a diabetic medicine or a medicine that's
It
needed?
may not, it may only 70% work, 30% doesn't work. So they give you this hoping that it would work because my DNA is different than yours, because who I am is different than yours, because what I eat is different than yours, because I'm from one part of the country, you're from another part of the country. I'm from one part of the world, you're from another part of the world. We are different. We're all very different.
You know what's pretty cool? I'm a veteran, and I after the show, I want to talk to you about telekinesis. I don't know if you ever went in the realm of telekinesis. You are on fire right now, talking some good knowledge I didn't know, but I have a reason to believe that I have telekinesis, but I have proof, and it's a video I took. And I don't want to add that in this video, but we'll talk after the show. But before I say that, have you ever met anybody that's have telekinesis?
So, Kimberly, you may be surprised as what I say. We all do.
Really?
We all do. We just don't tap into our intelligence, creativity, and mind because we limit ourselves by the mundane of the world. We live in this and we don't want to see beyond. Now, here's the thing. I think everybody, you go to the bank, you talk to the teller, you go to the coffee shop, you talk to the person who serves you. You go to the gas station, the person beyond the counter, or you go to a university and it's the professor, or you go wherever you go, whatever you do, your friends, your enemies. Everyone has a message for you. You today, right now, have a message for me, and I have one for you. And maybe not one for you, one for somebody who's listening to your show. I don't know what that message is. It's the recipient that decodes it. You, based on who you are, will take my words and what I'm trying to give you. And you decode that. Now, can I listen and hear and understand those decodings? It takes time and it takes practice and it takes openness to it.
Understood, understood.
Now, this may be a little bit different than thinking that there's only a few individuals who are, superb. We're all superb. We were all created at the same thing, with the same seed, with the same place. We're not different.
Thank you. Okay, in China, another scientist, a well-known scientist, he was telling me about China and how their air quality is bad, but they do chemtrails. And just like here in the United States, but their chemtrails must be different because the pollution, when it gets summer, it'd be like people have to wear masks on the regular. And also the second thing, the sun. They have a sun in their laboratory that I believe I read that's more powerful than our sun out of space. And it is more powerful than 10 nukes, 10 weaponized nukes. So what is your input on that?
So let's take the air quality stuff and what they're doing. If
Okay.
you look at the news, Janet Yellen, who's our Treasury Secretary, announced, and I've got articles, you can search it, you can find it, going back to 7, 8 years ago that I've talked about. Because now all of a sudden we're saying this is an issue. The Chinese have focused on things for 20, 30, 40, 100 years from now. We
Yeah.
focus on, what am I making today? Am I going to get into the Congress and let me bribe this guy and get a few pieces of that and give whatever bullshit I want to people? And okay, let me get there. And then if we have companies, we care about this quarter. If you have, right? So, for example, I know I'm digressing, but people say, oh, they took our jobs to China. Who took your jobs to China? Not the Chinese. It was the CEO of GM and Ford, and they said, hey, we got to make money. And why would they want to make money? One is the CEO wanted to fill up his pockets and his executive team, and the stock market wanted the stock to go up. And they say, hey, why should I pay you $20? I'll go pay that guy $2. It wasn't the Chinese that took your job. It was the companies. We did it to ourselves. But we want to blame somebody. Now, let's take the Chinese. The Chinese, I would say 2017 or 18, I saw that they have this 5-year plan that goes 50 years. That they they produced this plan of what they're doing. They said, we're going to move from being the labor economy, the factory of the world that you send stuff there and they make things and, you know, $2 shirts and $1 shirts. And we're becoming the technology economy.
Mm-hmm.
They have, they've focused on things like solar. They've focused on green energy and they have, for example, we still have our coal mines, which is very, very, you know, environmentally unsafe.
Okay.
And people-wise unsafe. It's a lot of dangerous for people to go on in the mines and lots of people die. And they've turned pretty much all of their coal mines, they've put hundreds of miles of solar panels on top of it.
Okay.
So they've turned them into solar farms as opposed to coal mines.
Is that better?
Yeah, it's all solar energy and it's clean energy. And
cool.
They have now beaten our EV, electric vehicle production limits. They've mm-hmm. also have better technology. Their batteries are their chips, what goes into your phone and into computers are pretty darn advanced. They're very advanced. So yes, I have been there. The weather and the and people do wear masks, but they don't wear masks just because the weather is not good. They do masks even when the weather is good because they don't want to get other people sick. They'll say, if I'm sick, there's a lot of, you have 1.5 billion people, Kimberly.
Mm-hmm.
So a city is 27 billion people, 27 million people. So if you say Beijing, it's 28, 27 million people in one city.
Wow.
Okay. Los Angeles, if you take the Los Angeles County and all the surrounding cities, it's 14 million.
Oh, my God. So they are advanced with people. Like
they have a city.
Yeah.
They have what they call a smart city. That's where Alibaba is. You know, where Alibaba is the competitor of Amazon. It's a company.
Yes.
And they call it a smart city. So that everything, the city is all connected. So if you get into an accident, that ambulance has a connection to the street lights, has a connection to the hospital, that they know what is wrong with you. They have all the information that the hospital. But, so we have ignored this fact that while we were arguing about nonsensical things, which we do, I mean, you can go open up the news anywhere, they have been working on building things and they've been growing and they've been doing things. You know, they've gone in the past 10 years from a $2-3 trillion, $4 trillion GDP to a $15-17 trillion GDP. They've been growing at 8%, we've been growing at 2%, 3%, so it's three times as much growth. So is it bad? Is it good? That's a different question. You know, do we think that our way of life is better than theirs? Maybe that's our opinion. Is their life better? I don't know. But what matters is we have ignored the progress and have confused ourselves with this entanglement,
mm-hmm.
Which I guess is an evolutionary term in life. You know, we all go ebbs and flows. And there's books like Ray Dalio is a big weed. He has books about, hey, these cycles that the Persian Empire went up and came down, the Roman Empire went up, the Dutch went up, and then the British went up, and then it's maybe our time to. Those are all theories that I don't know if it's right or wrong. But what I know is that we're at a very interesting time in life to be able to take advantage of a lot of stuff.
I have a quick question about China too. Also, and you said that so powerfully. Well, you're teaching me so much. And so this is the question that popped in my head. I wanted to know the news. You know how we get the news and how some people say it's fake news, some people say it's not. But seems though it's 27 million people or billion. Is it billion or million people in Beijing?
27 million.
That's still large. 27 million people. I was wondering, when China puts out news, since you've been there, do they have regions that put out one thing in a different region that put out something different to keep them like from, getting hectic or anything,
So, Kimberly, here's the truth. The truth is politicians are the same everywhere in the world.
Understood.
Whoever wants to control us has to divide us. Because if you and I get on the same page and we know each other, you know what we all want? We all want happiness. We all want the same thing. We don't want a different thing, except they force you to say, see happiness this way. They force me to see happiness this way. And then there is a divide. And if unless there is a divide, they can't take an advantage of us. They can't make a buck. So yes, the news is censored. I haven't been in multiple regions to see how different they are in multiple regions. But let me tell you something else. We say fake news today, right? But fake news has always been there. Let me explain.
Go
If you go back to 30 years ago and you listen to, because in those days there wasn't any Twitter or anything and whatever. If you go to the Russian TV, they would say one thing about the same event.
ahead.
If you go to the Middle East, about the same event, they say the same different thing, and we say the different thing. It's how we see that opportunity or that disaster or that thing. So which one is fake? Well, it's all a matter of perspective and all what we want to believe. So is there fake news that they have? Of course they do. There's censorship, there's fake news, there's all that sort of stuff. But sometimes you know which one is fake?
You're funny.
What is fake?
One last question, but we're going to switch it to Russia. Don't he have the pipeline? What is it called? The something pipeline where he's pumping what is he pumping? See, I want to know.
It's pumping gas and oil.
In which somebody blew it up.
Yes, there was a pipeline that went underneath to Germany. There's two, three pipelines. I believe they were building the last one. There's two that's active. One of them, right after the war, they blew it. That was going to Germany.
Which is limiting them from getting heat and power and different things in rural areas, right?
Okay, Kimberly, you're going to suck me into this conversation. I'll get into
I
it. So here's what I'm asking you, and I'm asking, I'm not suggesting. Yes, that pipeline was blown, but tell me, why would Germany, starting 6 months before the war, begins to pile up, or buy 10 or 12 times what their consumption was on gas and oil. 10 times more than their usual consumption from Russia, 6 months before the war started. So when the war started, the French and the British, they said, oh, we don't have any gas and the pipeline, but the Germans had a lot. Why? Why would they buy that much early?
And they're buying from Russia, right?
They bought it from Russia.
Oh, wow.
Why? Why would Mr. Mitch McConnell last week? You know Mitch McConnell. He says, you know, my Republican friends don't see our role in global world and the need that we have to support the war. We have to support, these folks that are fighting Russia and fighting democracy and whatever, right? In fact is, this is his words, in fact is 37 states in United States, 37 out of 50, are actually benefiting economically from the war.
I feel so bad.
Because we're selling, because we're replenishing. This is what he's saying. I'm not saying it. Because we're replenishing all the equipment, old bombs, old planes, and we're shipping it to Ukraine, and we've got the rest of it. So the perspective that I it's what is fake, what is real, I don't anymore know, to be honest with you. I don't know. I don't know if these are being fabricated. I don't know if all these people that are being killed and all over the world are really justifiable, or is it because we have personal interests at the game? I don't know. But I do know something.
I know you do. Yeah, it's so funny. So, tell me about your country, which is you said Iraq or Iran.
Iran, yeah, Iran.
Which is the two countries that are fighting right now?
Which is not the two countries that are fighting.
That, well, I know. I like that. You're very smart. Yeah, I just wanted to.
So here's the thing that people, so there is Palestine, and this is where they have these guys who are really terrorists running the country, and it's not really a country, but they consider it a country. That's why they're saying the two-state solution, whatever, whatever. Palestinians thinks it's their country, and the Israelis think it's their country. So the fight is, okay, who's got the land, who's got the control? Over the years, you have terrorist organizations that have built up. The major one is Hamas. And those were the guys as a terrorist that attacked Israel. In retaliation, the Israelis have now, I mean, there's different numbers, 30,000, 70,000, some huge number. 5% of the population of Gaza have been killed because of the retaliation. Now you have other dynamics. You have Lebanon, and they have the Hezbollah and some other terrorists in it. And you have in Syria the guy who's been trying to be in power for years, who has killed, and then you have Iran. Okay? So Iran is essentially a supporter of terrorist organizations. This is not the same Iran that I left. This is not the Persian Empire. Do you know that on top of the United Nations, there is a statement, and that is from Cyrus the Great? It's something that Iranians practiced 3,000 years ago almost. Okay? So this Iran is not the same as the one that I left. This has been captured, if you would, by Islamists, and it supports all of this mess. Now, again, they're messing up in Israel, and they're messing up Lebanon and Syria because they don't want to have the mess in their own backyard. But they use that leverage to get other things. So it's a mess. And again, it's about separation provides power.
Well said, and I feel bad for your country. Like, I wish there was something that we could do about that, you know. But moving, I
There
want
is.
what?
There's a lot of things that we could do.
What do you want me to do?
What do you want? What I want you to do? I don't know if you heard about the Women Life Freedom Movement. That was 2 years ago.
No,
So
sir.
there were millions of people that came on the street. You didn't see it on your show or on the news because it wasn't to the interest of the people here. In one day, they killed 1,500 people on the streets. One day, did we hear that? No, we didn't hear it anywhere. So yeah, if people have they raise their voice and they do something, yeah, we could help. I'm not sure if we could take guns and move there, and that's not who we are, but hey, if we put enough pressure on the system, yeah, we could. But we have to be aware of what's going on beyond our four walls.
Some people don't even understand or acknowledge what's going on. I seen that there was a war, but I didn't understand it because it's so many split up, Iraq, Iran, and then it's Afghanistan, Pakistan, and it's so many of them. So I was a little confused with the cities or the countries, and I was like wanting to talk about it, and I'm still going to talk about it because I want to see what the reason for the war is. It's just no reason. They both want.
Kimberly, it's
Why?
not that people don't. I have a fundamental belief. Sometimes my wife says that you have too much faith in people, but I do, and I continue to have faith in
I
people.
like that.
It's not that they don't understand. It's that they don't want to understand. It's not a matter of their ability to understand. It's not their interest because they say, "What can I do about it? Why should I care?" There's I have people on the street here, homeless people two doors down. So what am I doing about this? Nothing. We even ignore those. So yeah, they're on 10,000 miles away from us. So it's not that we don't understand. It's that we don't want to spend the time to understand, because when we understand, then we have to do something about it. I used to have a company, Kimberly, 10, 12 years ago, 15 years ago. And we went to various drug companies and we said, hey, we can understand from all these people that are talking on social media, people that take this drug or that drug, what are the side effects of these drugs? Mm-hmm. Well, I can tell you, hey, this drug, these people with these issues, I can take information from the web and I can aggregate it and I can tell you, hey, this drug is... And when we went there, they said, we don't want to know. And we said, why? He said, if I know, I have to do something about it. So if I don't know, nobody can sue me because I don't know. When somebody sues me, I say, I don't know this has this side effect. I don't know this would happen. If I know about it, I got to do something about it. It's the same thing. We don't want to know because then we have to do something about it. And we feel, hey, we're always in desperation and depression mode because we see all these injustices around the world. Because we can't do anything about it. But in truth, we can. Together. Not independent.
And Biden is sending money over there, right?
That's another problem.
Okay, tell me about that.
Is sending money to both sides.
No way.
Yes, ma'am. One side. He's sending money to all the three ways. He's sending money to Iran, and they're supposed to be on the this list and that list because he says, hey, don't interfere there. Let me give you some money. Let's take care. He's sending weapons to Israel. And he's sending money to humanitarian aid for people. So he says, here's the weapons. Now go bomb those guys. And I'm going to give these guys, humanitarian aid for food and this and that. What is this? This is a continuous loop. But it's not just Biden. It's not just Biden. It's our foreign policy has been the same for years and years. There's lip service people give here and there. We're the same. We look to gain advantage on every direction.
Is it true? I have a question. Is it true that the Mexico border, because I read something in my homework that says that we get paid every time. Well, United States gets paid from each country that brings in goods and brings in stuff to our state. But my question is, if that's a true statement, which I read, when immigrants come over, like terrorist type immigrants, do they get paid per head for them coming over? Because it has to be some type of agreement between.
Who gets paid per head?
United States. And then, because every sanctuary state gets paid for immigrants to come in, right?
Well, so, terrorists. No, that's not okay, true.
Tell me.
That's not true. So, again, this is an area that there's so much nonsense on Facebook and on social media because somebody makes something up and then it's all over the place.
Yes.
And it's hard to say, again, because they've confused us with this fake news and real news and what is there. And the truth is always somewhere in between. So, we make money if... here's how we make money. If you transport something from China, goods,
yes,
there's tariff. We get a percentage of that tariff. That's true. That's a globalization world, controls our world associations that controls the tariffs and how much you make and what all that sort of stuff. Okay. But then there's the immigration problem.
Okay.
The immigration. Nobody gets paid. For example, Guatemala is not getting paid for people coming to here, and here nobody is getting paid for anything. The number of, if you look at the, I don't remember the statistics exactly, but I can give you in approximate times. So we say these people that are coming illegally are doing a lot of crimes. The ratio of the crimes that they are doing is much, much less than our normal people.
Yes.
It's less. They're not really mostly bad.
I agree.
They actually give us about $90 billion, the immigrants, $90 billion with a B every year. And they cost our systems, that is healthcare, blah, 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 $5 billion. So they are a net positive to the United States. They actually don't get any of the jobs that Americans would like to do. We don't want to do a lot of this stuff. And guess what? If I pay that guy $50 to cut my grass, and it's an American guy, then my milk cost is going to go up. My rent cost is going to go up. Everything is going to go up. So if I'm comfortable with not doing it, so they're doing a contribution. Now, yes, there are problems. And you'd say if one illegal comes in and kills somebody, it's a bad thing. I agree. There's no argument there. It's a bad thing. But the ratio of that illegal coming in versus a regular person that's here in terms of how they kill, we kill more when we're legal than when we're illegal.
Okay.
So should we have control over the borders? Yes. Now, you asked another question. That is the terrorists that are coming in. I haven't seen a real statistics on how many terrorists are coming through the borders. Even one is too many. Mm-hmm. I agree. Some of those people may get paid from the terrorist organizations to come and kill somebody here. But those are very, very focused. It's like a missionary that you pay to go do something. So they have a purpose. And we have a system with Homeland Security and with CIA and to control that aspect. So that's, yes, the immigration problem is one, but the terrorist problem is not necessarily the immigration problem.
Understood.
Now, you
know, real quick, my question, you answered some of it and you were continuing, but what I wanted to say was, what would be the motive? Because my interpretation is, you know, first people were conspiracizing that, hey, Biden wants them to vote for him. But my theory is Mexico and is paying the United States. And you said that's wrong, right? To have them come over so that they can, because it's just upper class and lower class there in Mexico.
Mexico has a problem with 13 million immigrants that he wants to, they say, why are you, you're closed the borders, okay, and you're not letting them in. They're all coming to Mexico and staying here. Imagine 13 million people have entered Mexico. Okay. These people need food. These need people health care. And they're saying, what is this? This is not of our business. So they've come back and say, okay, if you give us X number of dollars, you, America, we will solve it. We have the resources to keep these people somehow or another. Give us money so that they want to come over there. You don't want to get them in. Give us money so that we can provide them with the food and stuff here in Mexico, not in America. But that hasn't gone anywhere. The president over there has asked and says, hey, we've got a problem. We don't have the resources to deal with this problem. So it is an absolute nonsense that we're getting paid. The other thing is these people that are coming in, if they're illegal, they can't vote for anybody.
Understood.
So okay. It's nonsense that, oh, Biden is coming, letting him in, come into, it's nonsense.
Understood. Well said, by the way. So what do you think that Mexico, the president of Mexico, should do? Because I think that they should build more prisons. My solution was build more jail systems, even in Seattle, even across the board in the United States, because they're rotating them in and out. So whether illegal or not, people that break laws deserve to be in jail, especially murder, deserve to be in jail. What's your interpretation? I can see you
absolutely
going.
So we have, Kimberly, where are you located?
Seattle, Washington.
Seattle. So we have a problem, for example, in California, particularly in Los Angeles and San Francisco. They've elected a district attorney who believes that people have to be free. And so somebody You know, for a while, people would go into stores, into Target, into Walmart, into other places. They steal whatever they want. They fill up a big shopping cart and move out, and nobody stops them.
God.
Nobody stops them. They say, oh, it's okay. And in some cases, they say, oh, we don't have enough. You know, if we put people in jail, then they're going to be worse. So you can leave on your own reconnaissance. So they catch you. You've done something bad. You go to court. 10 minutes later, they let you go.
Yes, that's true.
Okay. Okay. So this is a structural problem that says we don't have a system that we have crimes punished properly. Now, we in the United States have 25% of the world's prisoners. One fourth.
Wow.
We only have 5% of the world's, we have 5% of the world's population. We have 25% of the world's prison population.
Is that including Guantanamo Bay?
That is 20 people there.
Okay.
That is not that many people.
Yeah.
Pimple on an elephant, Kimberly. Pimple on an elephant. We have a significant number of prisoners. And we don't fix it. And most of them are not illegals. Most of them are very, very legal. So we have a system, a structural system that is broken. And is it about more prisoners? What? How many? What percentage of the world's population do we want to have as prisoners? We have 25%. Should we have more?
No.
So, but this is the divide between our thinking. Oh, you know, some people think, oh, we're Switzerland. You know, in Switzerland, people check in at night; they're prisoners. And then they let them go in the morning and they work and they come back. You're prisoners.
What about Hungary? Because I remember I heard...
don't know much about Hungary.
Okay. And Russia, and China. I hear that China have swift punishment and they lock them up or they execute them or something.
They don't execute them, but here's the thing. If you steal something, because there's all of these cameras, for example, we say, oh, this is our privacy. Why are there cameras given to police or at stations that would track our movement? Mm-hmm. This is what we're saying. I'm not sure if, you know, we have a saying that if your accounting is right, you're not afraid of IRS. You're only afraid if you've done something funky.
Yeah.
If my accounting is correct, if I'm not a terrorist, if I haven't done anything, why would I be afraid of the police? Why would I be afraid of anybody?
That's how I feel. Right.
So, okay. So we're saying, why do we have all these cameras following people? That's our privacy. Now, in China, you don't have that. There's cameras all over the place. It's reading your face. It knows exactly who you are. It's connected to your social security number.
Love it.
If somebody steals something from somewhere and the camera captures it, they catch you within 10 minutes.
Dang. I want to say the other word. Dang. I love it. I love it. Oh, my God.
Nobody does.
Yeah. I hear all the bad people are coming, like you just said, to the United States because they know they can get away with crime.
So there are people, for example, Chile is a place, you know, that we don't have an issue with, and people come and go. And I have some friends here in Orange County and some places in L.A., and they're all being robbed. You know, people get in the morning and they steal stuff and they leave. And when you ask the police, they say, oh, they're these Chilean gangs. They come here in the summer as visitors. But then they steal stuff, sell stuff, and go back to Chile. They are thief terrorists. Like, what the heck? How does that work?
Yeah, and tell me, like, Russia, for example. I wanna know about Russia because it's a lot of stuff, speculation in Ukraine, the war between Ukraine. I used to talk about it and keep up with it all the time, and I just stopped abruptly. But I just I sometimes we get one thing in the news, but I'm pretty sure Russia is putting something else out there and Ukraine is putting something out. What if my theory is, what if it's not Russia fault? What if it's just one big, this is just my theory, it's not right or wrong, but what if Russia wasn't the cause of the war because, you know, the compromise that Ukraine wanted to make with, didn't want to make with Russia, and it was a setup when, because I found out that they sat up there and they killed people and tortured them. They had a torture chamber and then they buried their bodies. And I was so mad at Putin. And then I said, stuff started looking weird. They blew up his pipeline. People were getting killed, little children walking across the border alone. What is your input on that,
So,
sir?
Kimberly, there is something to what you say. If you go back to 2007, and if you go back to 1989,
Wow.
when originally the deal was done for the Soviet Union to be divided into different countries. This is 1989 when the world came down, and Reagan was the president.
Okay.
Okay, they made a deal. And the deal was, let NATO be at certain levels. Don't push. We're not enemies anymore. We're turning this off. You guys stay in there. Then when it came to, so that was the agreement. When it came to during Clinton, Bill Clinton's presidency, they started to move the NATO lines forward. They included Poland and they included other places. And Russia, and Yeltsin was the president, then came on TV and says, "What are you doing? This is not what we agreed. You agreed that you would stay behind this line, and you're taking us as fools and blah, blah, blah." Move forward, we did it again. In 2007, there's the G20 speech by Putin who says, Why don't we be part of NATO? We have no enemies, we have nothing against you. Why are you just moving this and you're moving these nuclear things close to our border? Why? Would it be good if we move our nuclear things in Mexico close to you? Would you be happy? And he said, don't come past Ukraine. Don't come into Ukraine. Because now that's a buffer between NATO and Russia. And yes, we did it. We were about to get we were about to Ukraine into the NATO, and we had chemical weapons making there. We had some stuff there. We did. It's a fact. So there is a reaction. I'm not, by the way, I'm not saying that he's not a demagogue. I'm not saying that he's not a dictator. I'm not saying he is, but in his mind, he's protecting his own turf.
I agree.
Is he fully at fault? No. Are we at fault? Partially, yes, we are. But this is the gray area that we have, and this was something that during the Bush regime, the son, they called it the Wolf Doctrine or something like that. That there was this guy who was working there in the national security, and he was saying Russia should never be, we should never have Russia a part of NATO. We should never have him, we should draw that line over there,
Can
and.
I ask you what's so important about NATO being in NATO and why are they hindering him and what's their excuse?
Whose excuse? NATO?
Well, whoever's trying to keep him from NATO, what's the excuse? And now they're putting Ukraine into NATO. It's so weird.
They haven't done it yet, but they want to do it. And he this was where it started. It says, don't put him in. And they said, no, we want to. Okay. You've bordered this, the Black Sea or the whatever sea is that on the Ukraine. We have a line there that we do transportation. You're closing that. You bring in. Why are you doing this? And the reason is power. The reason is selling more weapons. The reason is I don't know, philosophy of they're communists and we're not. And I mean, you haven't seen more capitalism in. There's more capitalism in China and Russia to be honest with you, than it is here. But we still say the communists.
Understood. And where would
again,
you...
Kimberly, I don't want your audience or you think that I'm pro-Russia or pro-China or anti-America.
I agree.
It's a matter of facts. Now, however you want to, what conclusions, you can come up with whatever conclusions. I'm not saying I love President Xi in China, but I'm saying they're doing some stuff. Let us not be ignorant of it. We've got to get ourselves into this building technology. They're helping their companies. We're not helping our companies. We're divided between Trump and Biden. And this says this. We're confused and transgenders are going to restrooms or not. Who gives a hoot?
I shouldn't have turned around. Doug, don't laugh. Okay, yeah. Okay, that's true. You caught me off guard with that one. So, I wanted to know, too, the military. We're not even doing nothing with the military. I'm a veteran, and I see that we're not investing in our military like we could. We're not investing in more baby plants for baby formula. Gas prices are high. Bread, milk, eggs, just high. It's just not right. What is your input?
So that's a loaded thing. If you say about the military, I think the worst part is the veterans.
Really? What's wrong?
We're not providing them with the right health care. They come back, they don't have a job, people don't respect them. Okay, we send this poor guy to Afghanistan, okay? We had him do all this stuff. We did it. And then when he comes back, some people say, oh, this guy has killed people. Well, we sent them to do that. What is he supposed to do? Yes, he didn't defend our country because nobody was coming in, but that was his mission. What can he do? So we don't take care of him.
Yes.
We don't take care of their bravery. We don't take care of their commitment. We don't take care of their self-sacrifice. That's a problem. Mm-hmm. And we give them missions that are stupid.
Yes, I agree.
So slowly, I think, and I'm not in the military, I've had a few friends, but I don't know if I were on the other side, my faith in the system would slowly deteriorate. Saying, why am I in Afghanistan? Mm-hmm. Why did we have thousands of people and soldiers die in Afghanistan and then we packed our bags and left? What did we accomplish? Nothing.
Okay.
So we're giving our military a sense of being a failure. It's the Vietnam sense. We're not winning when we go somewhere. We just kill, destroy, and then pack up our bags and leave. Why did we go in there in the first place? If we went to Iraq during the George Bush the father, okay, we were taking it. So if we had done that and finished the job, and if this guy was horrible and the world was terrible and all that, so why didn't we finish the job? Let's get it done. We left that guy, and then 10 years later, 20 years later, we had his son go back, and we went back in with some. Why didn't we, if it was so horrible? So we have unfinished stuff that if I was in the military, I would feel bad. I would say every time I'm deployed, I don't know what the cause is, and I don't know what a win is.
You know, if China ever decides to go to war with us, you know, I remember we would lose. We would lose. We may have technology, but we need to be more advanced. We're like number 7 in the world's greatest technology, and they're like number 1, you know.
They have focused on, I'll give you an example. And I don't know, we're going on for a long time. I don't know if you love to talk to me so much or you have that much time to spend on your program.
Yeah.
Okay. So here's one thing. I was once in China in 2018.
Okay.
And we were my wife was there with me, and we were about to come back. The flight was for Saturday, and this is Friday, and there's an announcement that there's a tsunami coming, or not tsunami, one of these hurricane type of stuff. And it's going to Taiwan, which is passing China. It's not coming to China. So your flight is okay tomorrow morning. 3 hours later, 3 hours later, you get an announcement that tomorrow morning this is gonna hit the storm is going to hit Shanghai. Okay? And it's pretty bad. Your flights are all canceled, blah blah blah. Now, in the period of less than 24 hours, listen to this, Kimberly. 1 million people were evacuated from villages.
Oh my God.
1 million people were evacuated from villages. We have a hurricane in Florida. We can't get rid of 5,000 people. They don't listen. They don't go. And then we always have some that are dead. We have something in, something in hurricane in Louisiana. We can't evacuate them. People die for no reason at all. That is organizing. That's logistics. That's planning. Now, that is dangerous because we don't have it. We can't get 10,000 people from, Florida in Miami to move from the path of the storm. We can't do it. We know every year that's coming. People get stuck on the road. People don't have a million people evacuation in a day. That's organization. That's what it's. The technology is one thing that, but there is a structure, and that structure is scary.
Yeah, it's very scary because you got to think, man, like China is on it. Like for them to move 1 million people, and what's his name? Ron DeSantis was having trouble because nobody can move without the approval of the president. Everything goes back to the president. I'm not trying to bash President Biden. I just feel like we should just state facts of what's going on. I don't want to say he's a bad person or a good person. I just want to state facts, which is he's made some poor decisions because teachers' pay, we're about to wrap up, but teachers' pay is low. They have to work two, three jobs, and they're the gatekeepers to the future of these children. And
Kimberly, the problems are the teachers. The problem is the way that we're handling the student loans. The problem is the military. But this is not just him. This is what I want to, We have a tendency as Americans to focus on who is in charge now, the president. But in reality, we have a complex system with the two system and the and now it's multiple systems. We have these people, progressives, they're on the left completely. We have these people who are Trumpian, they're on this side. We have these people that are this on this side. And everybody is trying to struggle for their own benefit. And sometimes without any logic, the benefit of the country is being compromised for the benefit of individual politicians who have to serve a master, who the one who pays them. We say government of the people for the people, Kimberly. Can you run for government? You need $20 million to run for Senate.
I
In
didn't know that.
California, it takes $100 million to run for Senate. You have to have this and that and payment. Who's going to give you that? The one that gives you $100 million is going to expect something from you.
That's scary.
So
That's
every
scary.
position that you get, look at it, local stuff. All the politicians are in somebody's pocket because we don't have a system to control what they have to. If they want to win, they have to spend money on TV and ads and Facebook and social media and this and that and that in order to get elected. So whoever gives them the money wants something. If you give me money, do you expect me not to give you anything back? That's
I
not that,
even,
that doesn't that's un-American. You give me money, you want something back.
I agree. Yeah. And where do you see yourself going? I'm gonna end it because I know you're a busy guy, but where do you see yourself? We're gonna talk about your books for 5 more minutes. Tell me about your one or two books. Tell me about two.
So the first one is called The Caterpillar's Edge: Evolve Again and Thrive in Business. So this was done in 2017. So it's a long time ago. It's a long time ago. And the last chapter People now send me emails and texts and stuff and says, how did you know? The last chapter is the 2-minute warning. When I say artificial intelligence is coming, don't be afraid. This is what's going to happen. This is what's coming. And this was, again, seven years ago. It's about the fact that we need to evolve and we need to learn to evolve in order to do better in business. And we got to get rid of our addictions, whether it's in business or in life, to evolve. The second book is called You Are Not Them, which is a bit more poetic. It's a little more philosophical. It's a little more, and it has to do with your entrepreneurial philosophy,
Okay.
where I say we're all entrepreneurs, Kimberly. Definition of entrepreneur is if you have something and you exchange it for something better, knowing that there is a risk, you're an entrepreneur. So we're all entrepreneurs. The question is, do you have the right philosophy, and what is it that you want to exchange your life and capabilities and creativity and time and efforts with? So that's about how do you build it, being like an ocean, being like a dancer, being authentic, being learning the art of nervousness. There's lots of stuff about mindfulness and mindsets and so forth in terms of how do you approach entrepreneurship. So that's the second book. You Are Not Them.
Okay, and if you can you give me an excerpt from each book real quick in under a minute, like 30 seconds each? Like, tell me something that's important from your book that you know should be, like, to give them a teaser, like a teaser trailer type thing.
A teaser trailer type thing. Okay, so there's let me from the first book.
Yes.
There's three essential factors in us being doing well in the future in business. One is we have to appreciate uncertainty, or we have to align with uncertainty. That means in the old days, we thought everything is certain. Oh, we make a plan in business. Now there's so many things. People are coming in. We talk about Russia. We talk about China. We talk about there's so many things coming, the evolution, the change, the AI. We have to align our mindset that nothing is for certain. Things change, so we have to work with probabilities in the way that we operate things. The second thing is we have to appreciate our reality. It's not that we don't have a goal. It's a lot of times we forget that here's our capabilities today. In order to get here, we have to be aware of what we have at incrementally, like, and this is where the caterpillar's edge come. We have to evolve incrementally. The caterpillar is one species. It doesn't get up in the morning and it's all of a sudden a butterfly. It takes a number of iterations. We expect that the minute that we decide to be an entrepreneur, to build something, we should be here. It doesn't work that way. The butterfly is an entirely different species than a caterpillar. It can fly. This one can. Yeah, right? So this evolution takes time. It has to do with our appreciation of reality. There's a failure in it, there's success in it. But then the first thing the butterfly do, it lays the eggs for the next batch of caterpillars. So this is a journey that always continues. And the last thing is be aware or appreciate or look for more. More what? More ahas, I call them. That, aha, when do you say aha? When the Yeah, you say, aha, I got it. That's when the solution to a problem becomes clear in your mind. Look for those. The more you look for those, the more progress you make, the more change you make, the more structure you make, because you find new things. You solve problems as you move on. So that's part of the first book. The second is about, again, as I said, that you are not them. It talks about entrepreneurship and what it is, which is I just talked about. And it opens up with a poem that's about you are the sculptor and you are the sculpture. We are both the art and the artist. You are the art and you are the artist. We're constantly creating our next masterpiece. And sometimes, yeah, there's a little flaw here. And then we go, we fix it. You brain, you brush, and it's this process of evolution and this process of we are always exchanging what we have with something better. If it's a mother that works 16 hours or 14 hours and takes their time, the money that they make, to buy a Disneyland vacation for his kid or food for his kid, that's an entrepreneur. She is exchanging what she has, her time, her ability, for something better, the happiness of their child. Or it could be Elon Musk, who does all this stuff, and he's exchanging his abilities for something that he feels is important, which is $1 trillion of nonsensical money that he piles up. Okay, I would say Martin Luther King is an entrepreneur. Mother Teresa is an entrepreneur, except they decided to exchange their life, their time, their effort, their brilliance with something different. It's what you decide, you exchange it with, that defines you as a person, as an entrepreneur.
Well said. One last question. Where are you going in the future?
I'm going where life takes me. As you can see, I'm old, but I like to be creative. I'm involved. I write. I think. I contribute. And one of the things that I do these days is what I call provoking. I can't motivate anybody. I cannot, Kimberly. You hang up the phone now. You may remember me for another hour. That's motivation, limited motivation. But if I provoke you to be you, to be authentic, to do this to yourself and not need anyone, because motivation is internal, I've made an impact, and that's my mission. That's what I like to do, to make you be provoked, because I believe in humanity and I believe in where we can go, and I think we are at a critical time in humanity.
Okay, a lot, a little bit. Tell me about the plaques on the back of the wall.
These are lots of different articles and things. You know, you've got things in Forbes, The Hill, London School of Economics, Independent, Time Magazine, ABC, Newsweek, USA Today. Those are both of those.
Well, it's been a pleasure having you on the show. If we can correspond via email, but you take care, and it was exciting talking to you. Thank you. Oh, how can the people find you? I got to say that.
They can look me up on my site, which is muhasib.com. Okay. My last name, as you can see it on the screen.com. Yes. Or my email is sid@muhasib.com. So it's pretty simple. They can reach me whenever.
Cool. Thank you so much.
It was a pleasure to be with you, and don't leave change to chance.
Thank you. Bye. Bye-bye.